1920s and 1930s, Tom Rowlands worked in Rhiwgraeddin Quarry and the Braich Goch Quarry. Margaret, his wife, also worked in Rhiwgraeddin Quarry in the enamelling room, where slate fireplaces, mantelpieces and worktops were enamelled with various marble effect finishes, etc. She would frequently come home with bleeding hands from handling the heavy slabs and the effects of the solvents, etc., used in the enamels. Before the Isle of Bryn Council estate was built in 1955, Tom and Margaret Rowlands and their two children, Kenneth and Blodwen, had lived in Acre cottages since the late 1920s. Close by, next to the Methodist chapel, lived Mary Morgan and her three children, Tom, Bryn and Irwen. Mary and Maggie decided it would be a good idea to buy a pig and fatten it up with all their combined kitchen waste. Then, when the time came, sharing the resulting bacon between them. They asked around and eventually received permission to keep it in the woods behind Plas Rhiwgraeddin. There was a small wooden shed already there, which was just big enough for the young pig to squeeze into. So far, so good. They shared the work of looking after the pig like a spoiled pet, working on the well-known fact that the more you fed and pampered them, the faster and bigger they would grow, and the tastier the meats would be. Not wanting him to waste too much energy on too much exercise, they encouraged him to stay in the shed, while everything the pig might desire was placed under his nose for consumption. The plan worked. The pig grew bigger and bigger and fatter. He would soon be keeping the two families in Bacon Butties for a long time to come. Then, one morning, disaster. The pig had vanished. Not only that, the shed had vanished too. Well, that's a bit rich, they thought. Stealing somebody's pig is bad enough, but taking a shed as well, that just about takes the biscuit. Feeling somewhat despondent, not to mention raging mad, they set about combing the area, searching for clues that might lead them to the culprit. What really puzzled them was how somebody could get the pig and the shed through and out of the village without anyone noticing. Suddenly a shout went up. "There they are, I see them, up there at the top of the woods." Everyone turned and peered up through the trees. Yes, there was the shed, moving slowly along the fence as if looking for an opening. They all stared, rubbed their eyes, and stared again in disbelief. Then everyone started laughing, fit to burst. The shed had short, stubby legs, ending in what looked remarkably like pig's trotters. It transpired that the pig had grown so big of fat that eventually it could no longer fit through the doorway of the little shed. So this morning when it woke and tried to step outside to do what we all do in the morning, it stood up and lifted the shed up off the ground. All its efforts to shake the offending building off only succeeded in jamming it tighter onto its back. In the end, he simply gave up and wandered off like a giant snail in search of breakfast. In the early 1950s, Ken and Moira Rowlands lived in one Acre cottages, where the garage is now in Isacoid. With the first five of their six children, number six came later, at Isle of Bryn. Although by this time the roof had been raised and the cottages improved, Ken remembers that when he lived there as a boy, they were quite primitive upstairs. The sloping bedroom ceilings were merely whitewashed sacks hung under the slates to keep some of the draught off as you slept. The only insulation was the feather quilts you shivered under in bed in the winter. Ken was a bus driver at the Crossfield Bus Company, and he started off cycling to work, but later bought a mini petrol motor from Reed's Garage in Machynlleth to fit onto his bicycle to speed him along. It fitted under the saddle and drove the back wheel by pressing a small pulley against the tyre, a commonly seen and economical gadget in those days. Talking of bikes, a Caradoc Lloyd used to keep a bicycle shop in the house at the back of four Acre cottages. Ken only remembers bikes being stored there, though. Another resident in the terrace was George Thomas, who worked at the Braich Goch Quarry and drove a steam lorry there. At one time, he kept a pet fox in a bakehouse, Tifurn. on the end of the row. Mavis Compston came to Isacoid in 1975 after the death of her husband Ken Compston, who was the sports editor of the Sunday Times. She had been coming here previously on painting courses by Aubrey Phillips at Abergynolwyn. Mavis had a real flair for art and became quite an accomplished painter. One of her paintings is displayed at Dolphannog Fawr Tallaght. Sadly, Mavis died in 1999 and her daughter Karen now lives in Isacoid with her husband Dick. In the late 1930s, there were four houses in the terrace of Teesab down by the footbridge. Later, one of them fell into the river, leaving three. In one of them lived Catherine Jones, who had lived there since at least 1890 with her mother and father, Catherine and Lewis Rowlands, and eight of their eventual 14 children, Richard, Catherine, Edward, Lucy, John, Thomas, Mary and Alfred. Lewis and Catherine were Julia's great-great-grandparents. In number four, at the same time, there lived another Rowlands, Edward and his wife Elizabeth, with their son John. Lillian Morris remembers as a child in the 1940s walking from her home in Teesab to Bonpren Valley, now called Nursery Cottage in Penperthog, to collect milk to bring back and deliver around the village. The milk was carried in a large can with a special 1-pint measure and contained just the right amount to go around all the customers. Lillian would frequently get herself into trouble by being a little too generous with the measure at some houses, so by the time she got to the last few, she would not have enough milk to finish the round. This meant another trip back to Penperthog to get more milk and rush back to deliver it before dashing off to school. All this at only about 12 years old. In the late 1930s, when Louis Morris Sr., that's Louis Morris Cabot's father, was living in Teesab with his wife Margaret and their children, one of his younger sons, Emrys, was Ken Rowlands' best mate. One day, when Ken went to call for Emrys to come out to play, his friend was not quite ready, so his mum told Ken to sit down and wait for him while she was doing something in the kitchen. Both the front and back doors were open to let the air and light in. Suddenly, to their amazement, a fox trotted in through the front door and, completely ignoring them both, crossed the room, under the table, through the house and out through the back door. He then ran across the garden, through the hedge and off down the river bank towards the quarry. Ken and Emrys' mother looked at each other and started to laugh. However, the laughter froze on their lips a few moments later, for in through the door trotted a foxhound, then another and another. Instead of all rushing through the house together, though, they followed each other in perfect single file, following the fox's route exactly. This continued until eventually the whole pack had filed politely through the house, out through the back door and off down the river bank. I suppose they were lucky the hunt followers, some on horseback, did not decide to do the same. The first footbridge on the site of the current one in Esgyrgeiliog was built when the railway bridge connecting the Aire Slate Mill with the Corrige railway station fell into disrepair in the early part of the 20th century. As a temporary measure to enable the villagers to reach the station, the Corrige railway manager provided them with some second-hand timber to build themselves a wooden footbridge. Although the railway bridge was later repaired, for a few more years at least, the new footbridge proved a popular and much safer means of crossing the river. So popular, in fact, that when the wooden bridge eventually needed replacing, a new, much sturdier and more permanent one was built in concrete and stone, which remains in regular use today. Brian Rowlands remembers crossing a bridge on his way to catch the school bus one morning in the early 1960s. As he was crossing, he heard a sudden roaring sound from upstream, and looking towards the factory, he saw a wall of water hurtling round the bend and towards the bridge. Of course, he didn't linger, but sped over the bridge and up to the other side as fast as his little legs would carry him. Looking back from a safer spot, He saw cattle and even a caravan being swept up against a bridge and water roaring over the footway. He found out later that there had been a cloudburst in Aberllewenny and the resulting flood had caused much damage all the way down the river. There is a curious feature on the river, starting just level with a factory building, but on the opposite bank is an old watercourse. It is cut through the rock very finely and accurately and runs around the corner of the river under the footbridge and finishes at a point just above the waterfall known as the Frwd, about 50 yards downstream from the footbridge. There is no sign of an old mill or building of any sort at this point. It has been suggested that the old ruined house in the field beyond was connected in some way. Although this may be true, the end of the watercourse appears to be below the level of the house, and there is no sign of a channel to it or of a discharge back to the river. Another suggestion is that it fed water to the area behind the islands next to the Frwd in times of low water to enable it to be used as a pandy. That is a place where wool was washed prior to processing and spinning, etc. Given the proximity to the wool factory just across the river and the fact that the channel must be almost 200 years old, contemporary with the factory, that suggestion warrants more favour in my view. The railway bridge, with what appears to be a signal over the central pillar, was built in the 1870s by the Cambria Wind Quarry to connect their mill workshop to the Corris Railway across the river. It was subsequently also used by the villagers as a convenient, if sometimes dangerous, route across to the station and the main road. When Dick Jones was a youngster, he had been for some milk to Nursery Cottage on his bicycle, and on the way back, while crossing over Bontddu, he fell off the bridge right down to the river below. Lillian Morris found him on a rock in the river, seriously injured. He survived, however. Another boy had a narrow escape too, when for a bit of excitement Ollie Thomas' son, Jim, climbed into a quarry truck up by the station and released the brake. The truck started to roll down the steep gradient of the siding, picking up speed as it hurtled over the bridge and into the yard below. Jim ended up in a heap on the yard, just about where the Women's Institute later planted the little cherry tree that is growing there today. To prevent the bridge becoming a public right-of-way, there were two small gates on the two ends of the bridge, which were closed once a month, and a shilling charged for crossing to keep it legally a private way. When the bridge started to fall into disrepair, a new, lower and much safer footbridge was built further downstream.